Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to be reading this morning from 10th Canto, chapter 26, entitled Wonderful Krishna. And in this chapter, the Govardhan Leela has completed. Everyone has gone back to their homes. And the elders of the cowherd community are starting to speculate. Who is this Krishna? Who is he? And they weigh the options back and forth. They go to Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj gives his pronouncement. So this is towards the end of the elders coming to Nanda Maharaj with their wonderment. Uscha jascha nuragosmin Sarvesham no vrajaukasam Nandate tanaye smasu Tasyapyaut patika katam. Text 13 translation. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Vraja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? Purport. The very word Krishna means the all-attractive one. The residents of Vrindavan could not give up their constant love, anuraga, for Lord Krishna. Their attitude toward him was not particularly theistic because they were unsure whether he was God or not. But he attracted all their love precisely because as God, he is the all-attractive person, the supreme object of our love. The cowherd men also asked, how is it that young Krishna feels such constant love towards us? In fact, the Supreme Lord loves all living beings who are eternally his children. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna dramatically declares his affection for Arjuna and urges Arjuna to reciprocate that love by surrendering unto him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his prayers to Lord Krishna, states, Eta drishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivam idrisha mahajanina nuragaha. My Lord, you are so merciful toward me, but I am so unfortunate that love for you has not awakened within me. Shikshastakam 2. In this statement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also uses the word anuraga. Our misfortune is that we cannot reciprocate the anuraga or loving affection that the Lord feels for us. Although we are infinitesimal and insignificant, and the Lord is infinitely attractive, somehow we do not give our love to him. We must accept responsibility for this foolish decision. Since to surrender to God or not is the essential expression of our free will. The Krishna consciousness movement provides an efficient, systematic program to help conditioned souls revive the original blissful consciousness, which is love of God, Krishna consciousness. The intricacies of Krishna consciousness are so wonderful that even Krishna's eternal associates, the residents of Vrindavan, are astonished by them, as shown by these verses. So there's two questions there pondering. Why are we so attracted to Krishna? And why is Krishna so attracted to us? Earlier in the chapter, it's, who is he? Sri Sri Gornatai Ki Jai. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of what's happening. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur he's got some special Krishna channel. He knows what's going on inside Krishna's heart. And then he discloses it. And he knows what's going inside in the hearts of pure devotees, and he discloses it. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is as follows. During Lord Krishna's pastime of lifting Sri Govardhan Hill, the cowherd men simply enjoyed the spiritual bliss of the Lord's activities without analyzing them. But afterwards, when they returned to their homes, perplexity arose in their hearts. Thus they thought, now we have directly seen child Krishna lift Govardhan Hill. And we remember how he killed Putana and other demons, extinguishing the forest fire and so on. At the time, we thought that these extraordinary acts occurred because of a benediction from the Brahmanas. Or because of Ananda Maharaja's great fortune. Or perhaps this boy had achieved the mercy of Lord Narayan and was thus empowered by him. But all of these presumptions are false, because an ordinary 7-year-old boy could never hold up the king of mountains for 7 whole days. How old are you? 6. Can you lift a mountain? How about you? You're 7. Lift a mountain lately? So the elders are saying, other things may have been possible by a Brahmana's benediction, Nanda Maharaja's good fortune. Somehow Narayan empowered him to be protected. This lifting of Govardhan Hill, all of those other possible explanations are dismissed because a 7-year-old boy can't lift a hill, a mountain. Giriraj, the king of mountains, high in the air, the whole mountain for 7 days with one hand. And not even one hand, one finger. Not only one finger, the small little pinky finger. 7 days. Not possible. Krishna is not a human being. He must be the Supreme Lord Himself. But on the other hand, child Krishna loves it when we coddle him. And he becomes morose when we, his uncles and well-wishers, simply worldly cowherd men, do not give him attention. He appears to be hungry and thirsty and steals yogurt and milk, sometimes plays tricks, sometimes chatters childishly, and tends the calves. If he is actually the Supreme Lord, why would he do these things? Don't they indicate that he's an ordinary child? We are totally unable to establish the truth of his identity. Therefore, let us go and inquire from the highly intelligent King of Vraja, Nanda Maharaj, and he shall free us from all of our doubts. There's a leela that Rupa Goswami describes where some of you have been to Nandagram, Nanda Maharaj's palace, way up on a hill. And as you look in the southerly direction, you can see where the assembly area was, Nanda Baitak, where Nanda Maharaj, being the king of the cowherds, would bring the village elders together. They would discuss matters that affected all the village people. That was the system. Village elders would decide things and everyone would feel safe and protected. So, after the leela where Nanda Maharaj was kidnapped by the agents of Varuna and taken down to the abode of Varuna within the ocean, when Krishna and Balaram came to rescue Nanda Maharaj, and they came before Varuna, and Varuna recognized Krishna right away, he got up from his throne, sat Krishna on the throne, and began worshiping Krishna, and was offering him beautiful prayers. And Nanda Maharaj was watching the whole thing, thinking, what's going on? This is my little boy. But the god of the seas, Varuna himself, is worshiping him and praising him. And he's so learned. He's so powerful. So when he was released from Varuna's custody and taken by Krishna and Balaram back to Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj called an assembly. And he was asking the personalities in the assembly, he's sharing with them what he experienced. And then they began speculating again. Well, maybe this and maybe that and so many maybes. But we don't know. Then Nanda Maharaj began to laugh. He said, this boy cannot be the personality of Godhead. How can we even think like that? When he's hungry, he just cries and cries and cries and cries until we feed him. And we never feed him enough, so he becomes angry. How can he's not even a realized person. A realized person has control of their senses. This little boy, he just eats and eats and eats. And then he steals. What a realized person steals. He goes here and there. And isn't it true if there's some mischief here in Vrindavan, we all know who has done it? Krishna. What kind of yogi or realized soul, what to speak of the personality of Godhead? And then he just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And his laughter was so, he was laughing with his whole body. It was just like laughter. It just engulfed all the other elders and they began laughing and laughing and they just laughed it off and went back to their homes. So here, after the Govardhan Lila, the cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows. The cowherd men said, so this is their business. Their business is like Mother Jasoda, churning the yogurt into butter. What's in her mind? Krishna's pastimes. Because she's Mother Jasoda, she's doing this one. The village elders, they're doing another one. But what's on their mind? Krishna's pastimes. So just hearing and discussing Krishna pastimes. Since this boy has performed such extraordinary activities, how could he warrant a birth among worldly people like us? A birth that for him would seem contemptible. How could this 7-year-old boy playfully hold up a great hill, Govardhan, with one hand, just as a mighty elephant holds up a lotus flower? As a mere infant who had hardly yet opened his eyes, Krishna was just a few days old when Putana came. He drank the breast milk of the powerful demoness Putana, and he sucked out her very life air as well, just as the force of time sucks out the youth of one's body. When he was only 3 months old, those of you that are parents, you can think of a child 3 months old. Little Krishna was crying and kicked up his feet as he lay beneath a huge cart. And all the paraphernalia on the cart just went flying in all directions. Little 3-month-old boy. Heavy paraphernalia. The cart exploded into little pieces and the wheels went flying and the cart went flying and everything on the cart went flying. 3 months old. And little Krishna was just lying on his back underneath the cart, smiling. And he killed Chakatasura demon just because it was struck with the tip of his toe. At the age of 1, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky by the demon Trinavarta. But baby Krishna grabbed the demon's neck, causing him great pain, and thus killed him. 1 year old. Once, his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then, crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjuna trees and pulled them down. Another time, when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest together with Balaram and the cowherd boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized the inimical demon by the mouth and tore him apart. Little boy. Not just one time. Again and again. Desiring to kill Krishna, the demon Vatsa disguised himself as a calf and entered among Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon and, using his body, enjoyed the sport of knocking down kapita fruits from the trees. He threw the demon's body up in the top of the trees so that the trees would collide with other trees and the kapita fruits could come down and then they could eat kapita fruits. After arranging for the mighty Lord Balaram to kill the terrible demon Pralamba, Krishna saved Braja's cowherd boys and their animals from a forest fire. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent, Kaliya, and after humbling him He drove him forcibly from the lake of the Jamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free from the snake's powerful poison. Then this verse. Why is it that we're so attracted to him? And why is he so attracted to us? On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old. And the other, we see that he has lifted a great hill, Govardhan. Therefore, O king of Vraja, a doubt about your son arises within us. Please explain. Nanda Maharaj said, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let your doubts concerning my son be gone. So he's going to go to the cowshed with Gargamuni, and Gargamuni doing the name-giving ceremony. This is chapter 26. So the direct verses are quoted from chapter 8, here in chapter 26. Sridhar Swami's commentary says, the words previously heard from Gargacharya awakened Nanda Maharaj to the truth about Krishna, and thus, by Nanda's constant remembrance of his activities, all thoughts about their being impossible ceased to him. Now he is instructing the cowherd men with these same words. Gargamuni had said, 8th chapter, quoted again. Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call the child Vasudev. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss, still this is Gargamuni speaking, to increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd man of Gokula, this child will always act auspiciously for you. And by his grace only, you will surpass all difficulties. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra, having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and to protect the people and enable them to flourish. Two more verses. Their demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to the all-auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by enemies. Therefore, last verse, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana in his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence. He is exactly like Narayana. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities. Nanda Maharaj continued, after Gargarishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayan. So the cowherd men have heard the king of the cowherds, Nanda Maharaj, in a very authentic manner, quoting Garga Rishi, and he himself accepting. He's an expansion of Narayan. You want to sit somewhere else? Then behave. Having heard Nanda Maharaj relate the statements of Garga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened. Their perplexity was gone. And they worshipped Nanda and Lord Krishna with great respect. Jiva Goswami comments, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also comment, they brought valuable gold and coins and jewelry and cloth and grain and just placed them at Krishna and Nanda Maharaj's feet. Because they're now accepting Nanda Maharaj's word. Krishna is an expansion of Narayan somehow. We don't understand. The final verse of the chapter. Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted. And thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokula, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, animals, and women there. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with it. In this way, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, be pleased with us. That's Shukadeva Goswami offering this benediction. So by remembrance of these pastimes, just as we're honoring today, the Leela of Krishna protecting the cowherd community by lifting of Govardhan Hill and so many other details within the Leela. There's another nice section when he manifests, he tells them, don't take all this paraphernalia for the worship of Indra. All these grains and ghee and all these items, and cook a great feast, offer it to Govardhan Hill. And they did it because Krishna said to do it, so they did it. And when they offered to Govardhan Hill, Krishna personally manifested a form of Hari. And as he manifested that form of Hari, and Hari ate everything, Krishna said to the cowherd men, just see how many times you've worshipped Indra. And have you ever seen Indra? But you're worshipping Govardhan Hill. And now here he's manifesting himself personified to accept everything that you've offered. How merciful is Govardhan Hill. Let us now circumambulate. Get all the paraphernalia and the bullock carts and we'll circumambulate Govardhan Hill. The first Govardhan Prakrama. Which angered Indra to no end. So, Krishna wants to satisfy his loving devotees. There's immense potency in the leelas of Krishna, in the hearing and the narrating and the remembering of these leelas. And the fact that Nanda Maharaj, the residents of Vrindavan, Mother Jasoda, all the perfected souls, they continue with their duties, but they're immersed, absorbed in thought of Krishna, and they're thinking of Krishna in terms of his loving affection. Like they're bewildered. If he's God, why is he associating with us? We're insignificant
village people. But we can't stop thinking about him, and he has great affection for us. How to understand this? From a material point of view, it's perplexing. From the rasa point of view, it's easy to understand because they have such affection for Krishna, pure love for Krishna. Not because he's the personality of Godhead. Even when they hear he's the personality of Godhead, it's like they didn't hear it. They just carry on with their affectionate dealings with him. They honored him after protecting them by lifting Govardhan Hill for 7 days. The whole cowherd community was protected. And their cows, and their families, their children, their wives, everyone protected. So they're honoring him. But whether he's, whoever he is, the predominating feature is their love for him. And these pastimes of Krishna awaken that in the hearts of those who are devotional and not of a materialistic vein, it increases one's affection for Krishna naturally. There's potencies invested in these pastimes like that to attract our heart and mind to Krishna. For that reason, Krishna has come. To intimately reciprocate with his devotees, Prabhupada has described like this, but also to provide for subject matter for the devotees to hear and chant and remember and appreciate the transcendental nature of Krishna, because that's awaiting us. Just like the picture that was shown in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, those who are always engaged in worshipping me, and it showed the picture of the pujari making some prayer before the deity, and then picture change and you're in the spiritual world. What we're practicing here is to prepare us for that destination. And these wonderful pastimes of Krishna, similarly, they're not of this world, but they're being shown within this world to attract us to that realm. And by our attraction to that realm and loving exchange with Krishna, we can let go of the pale, fruitless, harsh objects of attachment in this world, or ways of acting in this world, as our love and attraction for Krishna awakens. So it's very nice. We'll do more of the same, appreciating Krishna's Govardhan Leela this afternoon. Any comments or questions? Yes? Where's the microphone? Go ahead. The garbage truck is louder than you. Speak up. The question is, first a statement, I'm attracted to the devotees, the temple, the association. That's natural and very easy. But the transcendental realm, I don't have the same attraction for. Why is that? A simple answer that Prabhupada would give is the making a comparison to the jaundiced condition of the living, you know, the disease. When one has jaundice, that which is naturally very sweet, misri, rock candy, tastes very bitter. You ever had jaundice? I did. And I wanted to find out what does rock candy taste like? Bitter. Oh, it's bitter. But the nature of rock candy is not bitter, but it tastes bitter. You want to just spit it out. It's so bitter. Not like mild bitter. Bitter, bitter. But that's not the nature of rock candy. It's very sweet. But because of the jaundiced condition of the body, it tastes bitter. So, to be attracted by the association of devotees may mean so many things. At least, you know, the nice qualities, the being attracted to the mode of goodness, the good, wholesome quality found within the devotees. The joy, the kindness, compassion, gentleness, and so on. And the joyful process, kirtan. It's all very nice. Deity worship, prasadam. But to actually have a taste for the spiritual world, even for that matter, Krishna's name. It's one thing to chant in a dutiful way. It's another thing to chant with taste. There was a very nice example of this is there's a morning walk conversation in Africa, South Africa, where the devotees were asking Prabhupada, what does it mean to chant with taste? When we're chanting our 16 rounds, how do we know if we're chanting with quality? That was with quality. And Prabhupada was, his answer was, you must. And then Brahmananda was interpolating, Prabhupada, we know we must chant our 16 rounds, but how do we know if we're chanting with taste? Then he said it again, you must. Then the question became clear. Long response. Prabhupada said, there's no question of, you know, what does it mean to chant with taste? When you're chanting with taste, you know. It's not 16 rounds, but 16 million rounds. The tongue cannot get enough of the chanting of the holy name. That's not our condition. So therefore, Prabhupada was saying, we have regulation. Minimum 16 rounds, you must. So it's to purify us, free us from the jaundiced condition so that which is naturally sweet, we can taste it. So there's vidhi, sadhana bhakti, and then raga anuga sadhana bhakti, and then bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So we're in the beginning stages of vidhi or vaidhi sadhana bhakti. We chant because we're obliged to. We understand with faith, this will purify me. But we don't have that very valuable quality of taste. But as one makes spiritual progress, a happiness comes that's a qualitatively different happiness just by hearing Krishna's pastimes and a desire to be in somehow or another, like, you know, may not be so clear what it means, but to be in relationship with Krishna. Even now, serving where we're conscious of our relationship with Krishna. And it's a maturing and purifying qualifier. We're not there. We're yet immature in our bhakti. So we can appreciate the mode of goodness things more. And we should be attentive to those mode of goodness things. Everything should be very clean and so on. We should be compassionate and tolerant and simple and mode of goodness things. They will help us go to the transcendental position. But the attention should never waver from the transcendental goal. So at least the transcendental means, the chanting, worshipping, praying. Yes.
When we hear such past tense, It's very wonderful, but sometimes I try to understand them with my mental, with my mind, and I feel frustrated. It means sometimes I cannot understand.
We try to understand pastimes with the mind when we hear them, but
that doesn't.
It's not satisfying.
Yeah, because my mind cannot think to that deep extent, and later that so much that faith doesn't establish in my heart whether that pastimes was really it was like that. So where is the problem and how I can?
You two are in the same boat. Here's something that Prabhupada said about this. It was specifically in relation to nectar of devotion. Prabhupada was asked, if we were reading nectar devotion to something that we don't understand, what should we do? Prabhupada said, read it again. And if you don't understand, read it again. And if you don't understand, read it again. And the outcome is not, oh, now I understand. But the outcome is, how wonderful is Krishna? Like another example that Prabhupada, he was asked, is it right, Prabhupada, if we, when we see a beautiful scene in nature or some very beautiful rose or some flower, very decorative flower with beautiful fragrance, can we appreciate? Is it okay? And Prabhupada said, yes. And the appreciation should be, how wonderful is Krishna? That's our understanding. To understand the pastime means, how wonderful is Krishna? How loving is Krishna? How clever is Krishna? How playful is Krishna? How beautiful is Krishna? How charming is Krishna? How wonderful is Krishna? That's all. Let our hearts be attracted, not, you know, now I understand. It's a different objective. What capacity does our little pea brain have to understand something unlimited? So that's not the, you know, success is now I understand. Success is appreciation of how wonderful is Krishna. And that's the title of the chapter. Wonderful Krishna. And the purport also says even the cowherd men couldn't understand. So, and they're with Krishna. So who are you and I? Who are we? That's not the objective. Rather, Krishna is all pure, and hearing about the all pure will make us pure. And we'll feel differently if we're pure. We'll see the world differently if we're pure. The attractions and repulsions of sense objects will cease when you're pure. Then you'll understand Krishna is the Supreme Pure. How wonderful. Just by hearing. We're coming to that stage where all the contaminations of material existence come to a halt. I'm getting relief from this being chased by the bully of my mind and my senses and my desires. How wonderful is Krishna? Like that. And as you enter into that mood or that space, Krishna will start to attract your heart. And you'll appreciate how he's attracting the hearts of his pure devotees. And just enjoying loving pastimes with them. Even the pastimes where seemingly he's in difficulty, or they're in difficulty, or they're arguing with each other, or they're doing things that, you know, worldly would be, you know, I don't know if I want to be with people arguing with each other, and they feel pain of separation from each other, and you know, steal and fights, and you know. But it's not that at all. It's loving exchange. It's loving exchange.
Okay. You mean when our heart is attracted, means we just have to accept them?
Yeah. And then when the heart is attracted, then you're the language that you're using, understanding, you'll understand in a way that means differently than understanding now means. You know, Krishna is the all-attractive, loving person. That's what I understand. Although he appears as a small boy in the arms of Mother Jasoda, he's the personality of Godhead. And so on. He's lifting Govardhan Hill at 7 years old. 7 years old, lifting Govardhan Hill. Smiling. With his charming glance, enchanting everyone under the Govardhan Hill. It's just a loving Leela. Smashing the pride of Indra. King of heaven coming and bowing at the feet of a 7-year-old boy. Removing the pride from the hearts of such a person. Who can do that? Who can do that? Take somebody you know around you and try to remove pride from their heart. Who can do that? What to speak of? Denizen of heaven, the King of heaven. Krishna.
As per our books written by our Honorable Prabhupada Ji, it is written that Shuddha Bhakti is best. But many times, the attraction is created after faith increases. When knowledge is increasing, the faith also will get intensified. So when the faith gets intensified, there will be more attraction. It will create more bhakti and...
It's not dependent upon... You have a premise in your statement here that I'm sorry I disagree with. And the premise is, when there's more knowledge, then faith increases. But the residents of Vrindavan, they didn't have that knowledge. Bhakti is not dependent upon knowledge. It grows... if you have more knowledge. If it was true, then all the scholars of the world would be great bhaktas. But we don't find that all the scholars of the world are great bhaktas. Bhakti is not dependent. Bhakti is independent. Independent. A simple person that has no knowledge can be a shuddha bhakta. Sorry to pull the rug out from your premise, but was that what you were going to... were you going with this? Yeah, we don't... When we're reading Bhagavad Gita, studying Ishopanishad, and so forth, it's nourishing bhakti. It's not gyan that we're after. It's the hearing about Krishna and understanding the science of Krishna so that our devotion for Krishna grows. It's a very, very different dynamic than increasing knowledge. In fact, we have to be wary of tendency to increase knowledge, to come to Bhagavad Gita for that purpose.
Well, what I mean is, as we are hearing more and more the greater things done by Krishna, our faith also will get intensified. That's what I mean.
Yeah, but it's not knowledge. It's just, you know, hearing about Krishna.
It need not be knowledge. It's only just hearing more and more about him.
Because he's
will
all
increase
pure.
Our faith and attraction.
Yeah.
And that will create more bhakti.
Because he's Krishna. He's all attractive. As we hear more about the all attractive, we become attracted. Someone else? Behind you?
Maharaj, just like residents of Vrindavan were put into danger, were put into trouble, residents of Vrindavan.
Residents of Vrindavan, Vrindavan are put into trouble.
Yes. When people, when devotees face difficulties, what is their consciousness? What is their consciousness when they are put into difficulty?
What's their consciousness in that situation? Krishna! Because they're feeling themselves so attracted and fully dependent upon Krishna, even he's a little boy. When Aristasura came charging into Vrindavan, he was so big. You've seen a big bull. But he was so big, his tail was as tall as the trees. As he was standing, and a big hump in his back and charging through Vrindavan, everybody ran in fear. Krishna! Please protect us. You little boy. Krishna! They don't know anything else. That's their consciousness. So Krishna came. He tightened his belt. Got ready. Arastasura saw him. The cowherd boys were watching from this side and that side. What's Krishna going to do? Arastasura became double angry. You've seen bulls with his front hooves. And he's snorting, getting ready to charge. He lowered his horns, aimed them right at Krishna. Huge bull and went charging right at Krishna. And everyone go, oh, Krishna! Krishna moved out of the way, grabbed him by the tail and slapped him to the ground. Krishna! Then he got up and he looked at Krishna again. And he was double angry. He came charging at Krishna again. Same. Krishna somehow moved out of the way. This time he grabbed him by the rear legs. Again he threw him by to the ground. Started punching him, punching him, punching him. Broke off his horns and started hitting him with the horns. And he died, blood coming from his mouth. Krishna, you did it again. How wonderful. Let's go have lunch. We're hungry. That's their consciousness. The forest fire that's mentioned. What's a little boy going to do about a big forest fire? Krishna! So Krishna said, close your eyes. Right? I'm going to give you a big surprise. Hold out your hand. So he inhaled and the whole forest fire went into Krishna's body. So Acharya's comment, why did Krishna ask them to close his eyes, to close their eyes? Because he thought that they would think, oh, Krishna's in danger, and they wouldn't be able to tolerate that Krishna's in danger, and so he had them close their eyes. They're just have affection for Krishna. And that's what we need to understand. Last question, because of our time factor. One fourth of the creation of the Lord is material. for the rebellious souls. Unlimited souls are thrown into prison house. It appears contradictory to the all-merciful nature of the Lord, at the same time, all-powerful nature. So, like, the question is, if God is all good and he's all powerful and he can make whatever he wants, why does he make a prison house? I just sent this two answers that Prabhupada gave. I'll repeat one of them. One of them was a girl was asking, why does Krishna do this? And his answer, he gave a very funny answer. He said, you're a nice girl, but you pass stool and urine. Does that mean you're not nice because you pass stool and urine? He went on for like 10 minutes about passing stool and urine. You're still very nice. But there's part of your body where it eliminates stolen urine. But you're a very nice girl. So Krishna, because all living entities are his parts and parcels, some of them are rebellious. Some of them are criminal. And so he expands his inferior potency and gives them a place where they're not going to disturb the lives of those who are pure. And provides a corrective measure within that external energy. Yeah, that was their question, not why is there creation, but why is this inferior energy there? If he's God, why does he have inferior energy? It's for the rebellious souls. It's not like using two examples, that this, when a state, they just can't wait to build their prison. But they have to have a prison for people that are lawbreakers, and they will cause disturbance for the law-abiding citizens. Or parents. That parents don't, I can't wait till I get a chance to punish my bad child. They're not thinking like that. But if there's the children are naughty, then some measure has to be taken for disciplining the children. They're the children that they love. And so, then so many other examples, but the creation is there, material creation is there for a certain sector of souls that just are rebellious. Were they not constrained and given that place to live, the spiritual world would not be the spiritual world. It would be a place of too much disturbance. And that's not the spiritual world. Spiritual world is Vaikuntha. So the material creation is there as a two purposes. One is they desired to try to enjoy independently from Krishna, so they have the illusory opportunity to try to do that which is not possible. Although Krishna has warned them it's not possible. And the other is the correcting feature. Like, you know, reformation. To bring the rebellious conditioned souls again to a law-abiding position. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.